Hey everyone, welcome to Turnbuckle Boogie. I am Timothy Styles, and with me is my tag team partner and co-host, Mr. Cutthroat Cody Hancock.
That is I, sir. Hello.
And we got a very exciting show for you today. I'm actually recording this before the rest of the show. I don't know, it could be terrible.
It's still exciting today for now.
But just quickly want to mention before we get started that if you're on Instagram, you can follow both of us on Instagram at Turnbuckle Boogie and at Cutthroat Cody. And Cody has a very exciting show. If you're in the Las Vegas area in the coming months, I didn't project the time, but go ahead and tell them about it, Cody.
So we were able to secure an actual proper venue for Future Stars of Wrestling's 12th and 13th year anniversary.
Well, don't put it like that. An actual proper venue. First of all, your guys' normal venue is just fine.
And there's nothing wrong with it.
And you regularly, pre-pandemic, put on shows in proper venues all the time.
But very anyway, true.
But anyway, you have a very cool place that you're doing something at.
So, thankfully, the Diversion Amusement Center on Hacienda and Arville will be hosting both nights on June 18th and 19th. There's going to be plenty more information coming as the days follow. So, be sure to keep up with me on the internet, and I can give you more information as it comes.
There you go. Let's boogie. You know, there's never a good way to just start talking.
Well, you just start talking. That's how you do it.
But I mean, like, look, even as a stand-up comedian, imagine, you know, you walk out onto a stage, a bunch of people have paid, so in a lot of cases, oftentimes, not to see you, but just to be told jokes, and you're to say something to them.
Yes.
And it's like, hey. Anyway, that's what it's like.
I have an opener.
Do you?
My opener used to be awkwardly just standing there after the MC would introduce me, and then I would get close to the microphone and I would quietly say, hello, my name is Cody Hancock and I'm not funny.
Oh, so you're very Stephen Wright-ish.
Yes. And then I would then go on to
explain. By the way, this is a terrible thing to do.
Well, but I would follow it up with one of the reasons why I wasn't funny. And there was a moment in time with my ex-girlfriend Flower, my very first girlfriend, when we broke up. She lived with her grandparents and her mom and dad, and they had lawn gnomes. Mm-hmm. And I got drunk and stole the lawn gnomes in the middle of the night. And she got very mad about that. And then I had to return the lawn gnomes. And I'm like, well, just let's get back together. And she's like, I really need some time. So the next day, I showed up to her house with an alarm clock.
And that's pretty funny.
She didn't find it very funny.
Well, that's a shame. Well, yes. I mean, you did steal all of her lawn gnomes.
I brought them back.
I always liked, as far as opening a dialogue goes, the scene in The Dark Knight where Heath Ledger comes into Harvey Dent's hospital room. He sits down. There's a long, long, long moment of silence. He sits down. He shakes out his hair and takes off the surgical mask and goes, hi.
Yes. Yes.
I love the idea that you could be disgusted with saying with gentle pleasantries.
Yes.
Hey, so not to switch subjects. No segues here, folks. I wanted to talk today about journalism in professional wrestling.
Oh, boy. I know where this is going.
And I use journalism as a term very loosely.
It's loosey-goosey, baby.
For reasons that I'm sure we'll delve into. But, I mean, this conversation was based around one night this past week. You sent me a text message in the middle of the night.
Yes.
I mean, it was real late for you.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, what's this? You normally never send me this stuff, but you said, actually I have it right here. You were like, hey, check this out and tell me, what do you think? And it was an article for a website, deadspin.com. Now, I've seen Deadspin, the name, float around for a bit.
Seemingly a reputable site.
I don't know what makes something reputable anymore. You know,
content in today's day and age.
Well,
just content.
I don't know. There's not that much of a difference between someone's personal blog and an actual website.
Not anymore.
Which will I think is probably what we'll lead into eventually. But you sent me an article, and I know reading stuff on the air is probably not that entertaining, but I'm about ready to.
This is important.
I guess so, because I read it, and I couldn't understand, like, oh, I wonder why he sent this to me. And I'll get right to the point. The name of the article, this is the title, is Cody Rhodes Needs to Fuck Off More Than Anyone Has Ever Fucked Off in the History of Fuck Off.
Yes.
So, quite a catchy headline. Very clickbaity headline. Now, before reading it, I already knew that in this past week of AEW Dynamite, that Cody Rhodes, which I did not watch, by the way, just I happened to be busy that night. Cody Rhodes apparently went out and delivered a promo that, for the first time ever for him, is has been polarizing because yes. It was overly America-centric, or patriotic would be a better word.
Yes.
Because he's gearing up for some match with some guy from England, I think, who yeah. jumped him a week prior and covered him in the Union Jack flag, which I don't think that's that insulting. It's not like we're at war with England.
And especially it's not that insulting anymore because one, the Union Jack flag is one of the dopest flags in the history of the universe.
Hey man, fucking England is cool.
Yeah, man.
It'd be like if Pete Townsend crushed you over the head with a guitar and then fucking threw some Who merchandise on you. Yes. You'd be like, yeah, red.
Thank you, sir. May I have another.
But the other part, I guess, and there is some mention of race, the fact that he's the whitest guy on the planet and his wife is of African-American descent, and they're going to be having a mixed baby, and that's what makes America so awesome, and England is fucking stupid, or whatever, however he put it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I think that... look, both country has their struggles with race. I think as far as Africans go, I think England's probably a few steps ahead.
Now,
they got Muslims to worry about over there.
Not to cut you off, but correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't this article actually come out before that promo?
I don't know. I suppose I didn't.
I believe that this article came out before the promo.
All right. Well, I have it right here in front of me. It came out on May 6th. So, I don't know. The show had to come out sometime around this. But the point is look, I saw this like a day or two after that promo, and I went, oh, this is probably has to do with that promo.
Right.
Do you want to
Cody Rhodes promo. So 6 days ago. So 6 days past today is the 21st.
Okay, so yeah, it's well before. This
is well before that promo aired.
But that did not occur to me. Because generally, when you get an article, you know, it's normally something fresh, and you go, oh, maybe that, because in my head, Cody had made some waves with his commentary, and this came out. I get this a couple days after, and I go, oh, I assume yes. This has to do with that.
Yes.
And I was surprised that it didn't mention it at all. I never checked the date. Doesn't matter. The article is written by Sam Fels, F-E-L-S, in case anybody wants to send him a message. But I'm going to read this. And I will attempt to pause and point out certain things. And
okay.
You can help out. Here we go. I should start all this with some boulder-sized caveats. Cody Rhodes is responsible for something a lot of us wrestling fans never thought we'd see. And that's a genuine alternative to WWE on regular TV. Cody basically started AEW on a bar bet. He also is responsible for me becoming aware of companies and wrestling outside of WWE in this phase of my fandom. And without him, I likely wouldn't have discovered New Japan Pro Wrestling, at least not until much later. That's pretty wild.
It's a pretty kind thing to say.
It's also, I think, probably consistent with a lot of newer sort of indie pro wrestling fans that
absolutely
really only came into it with the Bullet Club. Let's be real.
Yes.
You know, in fact, I'm sure that people who love the Bullet Club probably couldn't name any of the other factions in New Japan. You
probably
know?
Not.
You know, Chaos. Ooh, I don't know what that is.
Yep.
You know, but anyway, he carries on. Cody is running a very exciting company. I don't know that he's running it, but I'm sure he's pretty important.
He's at the round table.
Without question. Cody is running a very exciting company that, even with its faults, is presenting some of the best wrestling television seen in years and providing hope for fans and wrestlers that have felt underserved, underused, and underexposed. It truly is a remarkable accomplishment that in less than 2 years to go from running an indie show basically to make Dave Meltzer look stupid to creating a company that had one section of WWE on the run. The WWE on the run thing, I don't know.
At this point, I think that we'll see what happens with the test of time. As of right now, there is nothing putting WWE on the run of anything.
Or even one section. They don't give a fuck. Look, NXT is their sort of, hey, go out there and get some time on camera and learn how to do this. And if you're any good, we'll pump you up.
Absolutely.
They don't. The only reason that shit got moved to Tuesdays was to give them a challenge to work against.
Yes.
They don't care if they fucking win or lose it. You
yes
know what I mean? Because it's not even a big deal to them. Which you can tell because the programming there of late has been really corny.
Yes. Zombies.
No, not there.
Oh,
NXT.
Yeah. Oh, NXT. Yeah, gotcha.
We'll talk about zombies later. Carrying on. All that said, Cody still needs to fuck off. By the way, you can really appreciate a good writer who just goes right to the four letter words.
Yes, sir.
Whatever. I get it. It's his company. It's not, by the way. And I imagine one of the perks of having your own wrestling company is getting to insert yourself wherever and however much you please. If Cody's problem with WWE was that they didn't utilize him enough or effectively, he's certainly making up for that now with no one telling him no. Skipping the ads, pardon.
Yes, there's a lot.
Because, yeah, you know why? This is made for people to click on and so that they can get ad revenue.
Yes, sir.
No questions. All right. But for months, Cody has been a waste of time. And he keeps wasting time. And the only reason he seems to be on the show is that it's his show. Cody's matches always take up a big section in the middle of Dynamite. And they haven't been for a title or in a meaningful feud in forever. They're simply there because Cody wants them to be. And seeing as how he's VP, it's impossible to watch Cody celebrate himself and not wonder, couldn't a woman's match go here so they'd have more than one per week, you know?
So, one, correct me if I'm wrong, one of the things that happened in AEW was ensuring that Cody Rhodes would no longer be able to wrestle for a title.
That's the thing that hits me.
Yeah.
Is just in that one big paragraph, he preaches like a mark in that, you know, every mark, we've had these conversations because we're marks ourselves.
Yeah, man.
But you would hope that in journalism, you would look at things sort of evenly.
Objectively.
And yes, and take yourself out of the situation, you know, because look, this is a work and you don't know all the facts. So you have to back up and, you know, it's like whenever someone gets in trouble for some sort of salacious act, whether they said something on the internet or whatever the case is, a Velveteen Dream. Oftentimes I find that if the person is an actual baby face on television, more times than not, people are like, oh, I hope that's not true.
Yep.
And if they're heels, they go, I fucking, this guy should fuck off forever. And it's like,
yep.
They don't realize that they're being the, that the actual work that is working on them.
Yes.
All right. But anyway, I'm going to go on. Lately, Cody has been even more unchecked. Time was wasted on a gender reveal for his and Brandi Rhodes' baby. And honestly, the only two people who give a flying fuck about that are Brandi and Cody. TNT then announced a reality show following Cody and Brandi around in what appears Cody's never dying quest to be the Miz. Cody wants to wear the suits. He wants to shape the same persona. He wants to be the same constant presence, even appearing on a game show as Miz once did. Look, I like the Miz a lot, but there's two things. We only need one of him. And two, Cody is never going to be the Miz. The Miz came from reality television, is about twice the personality, and then in parentheses it says, the dude cut a promo during the ESPN celebrity softball game at the All-Star break a few years back. There's no touching him, end parentheses. I have about
Well, I know that, sorry, that rang a chord with you for sure.
You don't say. I have about as much interest in seeing as what goes on in Brandi's and Cody's personal life as I do combing through my own shit. Very eloquent as a writer.
Yes.
You know, look, I'm big on the English language, and I love to cuss a lot.
Fucking A.
I also love to use my extensive vocabulary.
Indubitably.
I like whenever I talk about fucking using big words, you always use that one.
That's the only one I got. It's my $7 word, dude. I say salacious.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Is it because of Salacious Crumb?
No.
The little Star Wars gremlin that sits on Jabba the Hutt's?
I didn't realize his name was Salacious Crumb.
Isn't it Salacious Crumb?
I have no idea.
It's something... If it's not Salacious Crumb, oh, fuck. Now I got to Google this.
Timeout. Timeout from the Cody Rhodes promo.
Oh, wait. I'll just ask, Alexa, who is Salacious Crumb?
Salacious Crumb, the character in Star Wars, Episode 6, Return of the Jedi.
Hello, Turnbuckle Boogie. This is James Mattern. I am walking in the streets of Manhattan on a very tranquil Sunday. I'm very excited to hear this episode on El Santo. A legend, arguably the most important wrestler of all time, him and Ricky Dozen. But unfortunately, you probably don't have any clips to play of El Santo because it'd just be all in Spanish and your audience would be like, what the fuck's going on? So let me tell you something. Years ago, I lived in Astoria, Queens, and TJ and I, Timothy Styles, would have late night calls about wrestling because we're winners. And I was going to pick up a cheeseburger at a diner. And I got stopped by the delivery man that I should have just had deliver at the middle of the night a burger to me. Because he heard me and TJ talking about the options wrestlers have. And I said, you know, I could go to AAA, CMLL, New Japan. This delivery driver from Mexico stopped. Middle of the night, said hello, and I freaked out. I was like, what the hell's going on? You don't want to get stopped in the middle of the night by anyone? Are you a luchador? He asked that to me. That's how cool Lucha Libre is. Everyone bitches about AEW, and even back in the day, ECW, how small the dudes are. Mexico has it right. I could be the world's super heavyweight champion in Mexico with my mask. That's right, Rey Mysterio. Double Senior, that will be my name, because I want people to know how much bigger in weight I am. Viva El Santo, viva Lucha Libre, viva delivery men from Mike's Diner in Astoria, Queens, for stopping me, thinking that I was going to main event Triple Mania. Yeah.
There you go.
Told you. I don't know if the mic picked it up, but whatever. But anyway... The guy has a point, but he's not a very good writer.
No.
And he shows his cards. He's a Miz fan.
And he's a Miz fan, and it's really funny to me that is the Miz the only person that wore a fucking suit?
Right. And walked around? Miz, ironically, his gimmick now was a cheap ripoff of what Chris Jericho was doing in the new millennium.
Yes.
And not the new millennium, probably around 2008, 2007, somewhere around there. And I'm sure that was half a bite from, you know, several other things.
Yep.
But he clearly likes The Miz, and you'll never be The Miz because you're trying to have a reality show and all this sort of stuff. It's very assumptuous.
Yes.
That, oh, he's trying to do this stuff because of A, B, or C. When really it's, he sees that reality television is a major draw. They're trying to draw in female eyes, and this is a way to do it. It has nothing to do with them trying to imitate stuff. You know, they are, whether people fully understand it or not, are trying to be a company that can be appreciated by anyone. They're trying to popularize their particular brand of professional wrestling to be more than just for the neckbeards.
Yes.
You know, this guy is clearly a neckbeard.
Not only is he a neckbeard, but once again, and it goes back to conversations that we've had before, if you really want to set yourself free as an individual, you gotta learn how to see things objectively. And just the absolute shoehorning of, oh, no, Cody Rhodes, there's Kenny Omega, there's the Young Bucks, there's Tony Khan, not to mention possibly other people that may have a final say in decision making.
And if you've ever seen anything about the backstage of what's going on, they really are in it all together.
Yes.
You know, there's no like, hey, they're not talking to each other. I guarantee you.
Well, there's rumors, but who cares about rumors?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, that's more of what we're going to talk about later. But yeah. I mean, the point is they everyone is very much invested in trying to better their product. Oh, I hate saying product.
But why would you not? Okay, well, let's say company. Why would you not want to better your company? And even if they are trying to follow a model that's working, here's the thing. If it works and people are going to buy a ticket to it, sell it. Like, I've always, the idea, the word sellout. Right. Man, give me the bag of money, dude. all means.
Look, sellout, when we were kids, you know, I'm somebody who, you know, was into punk rock.
Yeah, man.
And I remember going to see a show, and I think Rancid was there, and they spent fucking 10 minutes bitching and moaning on stage about Green Day being sellouts. Meanwhile, I had Dookie. I also had And Out Come the Wolves by Rancid.
Yes.
No one, on one hand, it's like, yeah, sellouts. On the other hand, it's such a juvenile way of thinking.
When you are in a situation to where you work so hard at one thing and the only thing that you want is recognition and to possibly be able to provide for yourself and possibly your family and your loved ones and things of that nature, I've taken bags of money before.
Sure.
And I have been creatively stifled. And then it got to the point to where I ended up having to quit the place that I was at. But I had the opportunity to pay my bills with pro wrestling for 2 years. And I'm so thankful for that. And it's an opportunity that I'm waiting for again.
Right.
And I do have integrity. When Joe DeFalco wanted me to do a cancer angle, I told him, no, I've had a cancer scare before in my life. I'm not going to do that.
You said a key word. I find that the people who are quick to say sellout are in generally jealous.
Yes.
And they don't know enough information to say someone doesn't have integrity. They're just quick to go, they can't eloquate it well enough to go, that person doesn't have integrity. They just go, he's a sellout. He's doing it for the money.
It's easy.
Like, I would like to make a living, you know, in any art form, you know. Now, if you see the art start to change in a way that is pandering or whatever,
yes,
then by all means. But if it's just someone making a living, just shut the fuck up.
1,000%.
Yeah. I'm going to carry on with this article. Cody was involved in the Shaquille O'Neal match because of course he was. That at least acted as the launch point of Jade Cargill rise to stardom. It seems no one can go over unless they go through Cody first. Except that doesn't really work when everyone's eyes glaze over as soon as he appears on screen. I don't know what the fuck this dude is talking about.
I was thankful enough to be in attendance at Double or Nothing, Cody Rhodes versus Dustin Rhodes.
Yeah.
And that match was an all-time classic.
Yep.
It was an amazing match.
Right.
So, hate to bust your bubble,
right,
but if somebody is equipped, are you going to put Shaquille O'Neal in the ring with Luchasaurus?
Right. Christ, oh, there was a fucking, he had a match on Dark, I don't know, probably within the last month, where he was working with some Greenhorn. No, yeah, Greenhorn. I almost wanted to say Green Thumb. That's something else. But anyway, these guys were trying to do sequences together, and at a certain point, they just come to a complete stop. This made the air.
Yes. And once again, though, that's the unfortunate thing. And I'm not going to go any further into taking the piss out of anybody.
Right.
But when it comes down to brass tacks.
But the point is he has been wrestling for what, close to 20 years at this point.
And he knows what he's doing.
And that's
he's good at what he does.
That's the exact person you put in there with Shaquille O'Neal.
1,000% in order to keep himself protected and the other person protected.
Right.
That's the whole entire idea.
Shaquille O'Neal doesn't know who Kenny Omega is.
Yeah, man.
You know, so.
Well, maybe he does now. Maybe they had a really good experience in catering.
Maybe they did. Carrying on. In the ring, Cody's quest to recreate everything he missed about WCW or right the wrongs done to his father lost their charm long ago. It was fun at first, as his exhibition of Southern wrestling pathos was different than anything else on TV. But with him off the top of the card, it's just not anymore. It's no longer a different style It's no longer a different style on offer and more just, quote, Cody does what he did in his living room as a kid, but on a TV show, end quote.
I think it was at that point in the article I stopped reading it and I had to reattempt to read it like three times because you have, it's just this personal vendetta. This dude is speaking as if Cody Rhodes came into his house
and shit in his toilet and didn't flush.
Yep, absolutely. And possibly pissed in his Cheerios and XYZ, whatever else you can think of.
Right.
And man, how can you take something so personal
right.
against someone that you've probably never even met face to face before?
I have an answer for you. This guy's a fucking mark.
Yes.
And I don't mean that as a sort of a negative term. He's a guy who can't separate fact from fiction.
Correct.
In that he clearly has favorites in certain people, and he has people who he's not a fan of. And this guy keeps taking up all the TV time.
Yeah, man.
And it's like, bro, there's more people on this fucking show. Chill the fuck out.
Yes.
You know, but marks are not good journalists.
No.
Because you have to look at things outside of the box. You have to, you know, sort of report on things, as you say. Well, I have a real problem with subjectively and objectively.
Objectively. Objectively is to be able to view from both ends.
Correct. Right. And that's really what you need to be doing. This guy's not doing that at all.
No.
He's clearly an amateur as far as writing goes. But in the era of needing clicks and advertisement revenue.
Yep.
It don't matter.
No.
You can have a salacious title like Cody Rhodes needs to fuck off to Planet Fuck Off and never fucking come around my television ever again.
Fuck off to Planet Fuck Off.
You know. All right. I'm going to try to breeze through the rest of this if I can. And yet Cody won't let go or cede the stage even just for a little bit. Lately, his feud has been with his buddy QT Marshall. Or is it Marshall? I've heard it pronounced both ways on their own television show.
We'll say QT.
Who has all the charm and watchability of a plasma donation. He's only getting the TV time because he's close to Cody. And everyone knows it. and the time spent on this the past few weeks has been an excellent opportunity to grab a beer and wash the dishes. Yet it gets a big chunk right in the middle of the show every goddamn week, and no one cares. Projecting. This guy doesn't care. Shut the fuck up.
Yes, sir.
All right. Last night was the absolute hilt on what otherwise was an excellent pay-per-view worthy card on TNT dubbed Blood and Guts. The main draw was the nearly hour-long main event, a War Games match between the Pinnacle and the Inner Circle. It certainly lived up to the name as the violence and blading flowed. I have a problem with this guy using blading in the there's two people who are too smart for their own good. They don't realize that they're not enjoying something.
Correct.
You know,
they take the enjoyment out. Al Snow said that.
Yeah. He's too close to the forest to fucking see the trees.
Yeah, take all of your knowledge away and just sit down and be entertained, motherfucker.
Yeah, sit down, tune in, tune out, yes. All that shit. All right, carrying on. But Cody wasn't going to let a show dubbed Blood and Guts go by without showing the world that no one can bleed like him, at least in his own mind.
That's definitely an homage to The Miz. Fuck. The fuck out of here. Keep going.
And what I can only pray was the blow-off match for this utterly useless QT Cody feud. Cody opened himself up again to try and put some sort of capper on it. That kind of effort for a match and program that flatlined on arrival felt like the definition of overkill. On a night about another blood feud, Cody had to simply insert himself into the night's theme because how could it possibly go on without him? The fucking balls on this guy.
Yeah, you know what?
Okay, we're almost to the end.
The balls on him, for sure.
Yeah, how dare he wanna fuck? And by the way, I don't know that he gigged himself. For all I know, he fucking got hardwayed. All right, we're in the home stretch here, folks. Perhaps I'm being too tunnel-visioned. Correct. And too laser-focused on the women's division. But it is AEW's biggest blind spot, and almost all of the problems would be solved by dedicating the 10 to 15 minutes that are currently used for whatever vanity project Cody has that week for developing more storylines in the women's division. The company seems determined to waste the momentum derived from the Britt Baker Thunder Rosa Classic. Baker has only been doing promos and got a 3-minute squash match last night on one of the company's bigger cards. Rosa hasn't been seen at all. Jade Cargill has gotten a couple video packages. Chris Statlander has returned, but all of these happened at one at a time. There's more to be done. I hardly expect Dynamite to go a long time without featuring any of Cody, Kenny Omega, or the Young Bucks as they run the damn thing, but the other three are at the top of the card and hold titles. Cody is seemingly spinning his wheels, taking up TV time because, well, because. A break certainly wouldn't hurt anyone other than Cody's image of Cody in his own mind. That's the article.
So you have somebody who made a proclamation, because this has been something that's been going on in the independent wrestling landscape for years. You have a guy who thinks he's really good and he's not that good, but eventually somehow he lands in a pile of money. He opens his own promotion and he puts a belt on himself. And it's something that everyone in the industry rolls their eyes at. Sure. And groans excessively and then just has to bite their tongue and say nothing about it. And then you have somebody like Cody Rhodes who actually understands this is a problem with the industry and decides to remove himself from the main event picture.
Yeah, his father booked himself as a world champion for many years in both WCW, Jim Crockett, and Florida.
Yes.
And the reason why it was big business, but you know, historically, people will always remember that he booked himself.
Yep.
He tries to do something to sort of take himself out of that, despite the fact that he is, honestly, their biggest star.
Yes.
Their biggest crossover personality.
And also one of the most competent people in ring.
Right.
And I am not without my criticisms of AEW. I am not without my criticisms of Cody Rhodes. However, when you just are so blind to see anything else other than your view, and you don't even open yourself up to possibly taking consideration that this is by design. Mm-hmm. I applaud Cody Rhodes for taking himself out of the main event picture.
Yeah.
Granted, in my opinion, I hope that one day he comes back to it.
Sure.
Only because he is capable of having absolutely amazing matches. And not only that, but look at what he did when he was the Dynamite champion.
The TNT champion.
He brought in local guy, or not local, but he brought in people from around the United States.
Right.
And had amazing matches with these top level indie guys. Some of them deserved it. That's all I'm going to say on that matter. But he really put his neck on the line to try to give something to professional wrestling.
Right.
And I would be elated to have the opportunity to have a match with Cody Rhodes.
Right.
You know, and just the absolute, once again, it's just blind. And like, that's why I wanted to send it to you.
Blind partisanship. Yeah, by the way, I'm going to read my review of this article that I sent to you immediately after reading it that evening.
Yes, sir.
Hello, Turnbuckle Boogie. It's James Madden again. Still in Manhattan, still walking the streets, still thinking about wrestling. Look, people need to stop trying to be like they're more important than the cons and, oh, he's a money mark. Thank God he's a money mark. You know why? Because we have real songs. He will buy any goddamn song if it can help get someone over. I mean, John Moxley's coming out, not just the Wild Thing, the version from Major League. Are you out of your mind? Another 5 weeks, Khan might write a personal check to get Wesley Snipes and Charlie Sheen to walk him down there. That's what I like. Let's get guys over. I'll buy any fucking song. This is Yes. Thank you. Do you realize CM Punk had to threaten to go to goddamn New Japan to get a Living Color song? Living Color, who I love, from New York, but it probably took 8 cents to get the goddamn thing. They hadn't worked in ever. Thank you, Vince. You gave us tickets to an event from 5 years ago. Here's the song. Oh, we get to play Mania in a few years? Great. They probably had to still pay for tickets to play CM Punk out against Undertaker. God bless Tony Khan. Just buy every song. I don't want to hear an original song ever again in AEW. I just want it to be like a jukebox at 3 a.m. and I have that goddamn app and I'm just cutting everyone's songs off. That's what I want. Money Mark? Bullshit. I call him a hero.
Here it is. Quote, I thought this was going to have cogent points, but it was nothing but a Mark rant from the point of view of someone who only recently became a wrestling fan and has no inside knowledge of how to run a promotion or the pitfalls that exist within. F- as far as op-ed pieces go, and I would gladly give this guy the same advice I would give any Mark with a ridiculous point of view. Save your money and start your own promotion, dumb fuck.
I'm available for bookings.
But I mean, really, this is one of many problems in the world of wrestling journalism.
I would almost even go as far to say in journalism in general in today's day and age. But
oh, well, yeah.
Just focusing on pro wrestling. Yes.
Yeah, I am trying to focus on pro wrestling. But yeah, this guy is more representative of actual mainstream media as opposed to Dave Meltzer, who is specific to pro wrestling in general.
Yeah, although Deadspin posts articles about a bunch of stuff.
Right. And he has his issues as well.
Yes.
You know, in the case of this particular article, this is someone who is a hardcore wrestling fan who's very excited at the prospect of AEW, who has his own his favorites and his misgivings, and he can't set that shit aside to write a fucking, you know, 1,000-word article.
Yep.
Has cogent points.
There are some points in there, and I understand, with their women's roster. Their women's roster is a big problem.
It is a problem, but he also doesn't understand. Look, you have to admit to yourself, I don't know anything about how that company is run or how to run a company in general. I'm just some dumb fuck college writer.
Yep.
You know what I mean? How does he know that, you know, the reason fucking, you know, Cody Rhodes is in there with Shaquille O'Neal is because maybe fucking Shaquille O'Neal only wanted to work with him because he knew him from the TNT brass.
Right.
Or
he knew him from WWE, or right. He was the most experienced member on their roster.
Or, as I say, all the pitfalls, you know, they have. The reason why their women's roster is not experiencing a whole bunch of time on their show is because a lot of it is greener than shit.
Right. So unfortunately, you have WWE, which has the absolute strongest women's roster going right now.
Yeah.
And I do appreciate the exports that AEW brings in.
Right.
But at the end of the day, if you put Riho in the ring with Charlotte Flair,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say anything else. Just you can put that. Well, look, I'll say it
for
you.
It's obvious. Everyone knows who knows barely anything about wrestling knows who Charlotte Flair is and has no idea who Riho is. And if it's a casual wrestling fan, they're looking at a very diminutive person.
Yes.
Who doesn't look like an athlete at all, respectfully. You know, it's just a small Asian girl to them.
Yes.
You know, yet this person was, you know, their first ever women's champion and for a pretty sizable stretch.
And I will also say I'm not taking anything away from Riho because I do think that Riho is spectacular for her size.
Hey, look, we love Japanese wrestling here, but unfortunately, some things in America don't always translate.
No.
And this is something that they unfortunately have to learn in real time.
Yeah, man.
And you know, you can see them pivot on these things as the weeks go on. Like, well, we've had this going, but everyone's saying our fucking women's roster stinks.
And not to mention too that also look at the period of time that AEW started coming around. The pandemic hit.
Right.
How much can they do right now? So
right. Go ahead.
Give it time, man. Like, let's see what happens a year from now, 2 years from now. Let's see if there's any changes. And then write the title of that article in my mind should have been, I want more women's wrestling, and I don't know who Ric Flair is. Because if you think Cody Rhodes is trying to bite The Miz, dog, I got a fucking big thing to tell you. It ain't fucking The Miz. He's biting Ric fucking Flair.
I think the title should have been, I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. Read this.
Yeah, man.
Because I mean, like you said, he goes over, the fact that, you know, Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa had this classic and they've not, you know, they've had some promos and stuff, but they've not been on TV together. Blah, blah. Thunder Rosa, as far as I recall, is technically exclusive to the NWA.
Yes.
But unfortunately the NWA had to shut down and there's politics backstage that have to deal with that sort of stuff.
And now that NWA is starting back up, right, and she is still under contract, guess where her obligations lie?
Correct.
So,
but this guy just assumes like, hey, you know, why they have this great match? Why can't they just be out there all the time? You don't know shit about booking. You don't know shit about what's going on behind the scenes. You should stop writing.
You know, so you want to know who one of my favorite journalists of all time is?
Please, who?
Nardwar.
Oh, yeah. He always starts off with, who are you?
So, Nardwar, for those that don't know, definitely look up his interviews. He is a music journalist.
He's a respected guy, despite the fact that he's so silly. He's a Canadian cat apparently...
He has a gimmick.
He has a gimmick. He's a lead singer of some sort of garage rock band in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And he just asks really, I don't know, to a certain extent, you probably could describe him better than I can.
He has contacts.
Yes.
For the people that he interviews, and he does extensive research, and he oftentimes will give the person that he's interviewing a very personal gift without knowing who they are personally, but he ends up getting this information from family members and ex-girlfriends and loved ones. Well, what was his favorite thing? Like, he had this Alf toy growing up and, you know, big fan of Alf. Right. Then all of a sudden he gives this music celebrity a stuffed animal of Alf, and who else in the world would know what that was? Because you have this guy, and once again, the whole entire shtick is amazing because you look at him and you're annoyed with his appearance, you're annoyed with his voice, but then all of a sudden he starts asking you these very personal questions.
Right.
And he ends up, at the end of the interview, he ends up making such an impact on the people that he interviews, and they're all left smiling because he actually takes the time to gather facts.
Right.
Actual fucking facts.
Right.
And when you, I'm always very, very quick to point out, I have a lot of very strong opinions, and I also have things that I would consider facts, and I speak on both of those. And before I say anything that I know might rub somebody the wrong way, I always preference, this is my opinion.
Right.
I am not saying that this is a fact. And I even oftentimes will open a dialogue. Do you feel differently than I do? Tell me why you feel differently. I want to know why you feel differently. And I will listen to what they say. And if it is something that may change my opinion in a way, or if it's something that I can understand where they're coming from, I will let them know, like, hey, I feel where you're coming from. And if I agree with them, like, I didn't see it that way before, thank you. And if I don't agree with them, you are entitled to your opinion, but I'm going to stick to mine.
Right.
And that's, to me, respectful.
I mean, it's the basis of the show. You and I, you know, disagree on a lot of things.
Yes.
But we're always respectful and understanding of each other's opinions. You know, yes. Before we hit record, we talked extensively. I've made the foolish decision of watching a Dark Side of the Ring episode before we hit record, and it happened to be about Nick Gage.
Yes.
And it was a bad idea because of my temperament for CZW and death matches and stuff at this point in my life. And it just left me bummed out. Yep. for reasons I'm not going to bore people with. But, you know, you sit on the other side of that fence and, yes, and disagree. And we always have a nice conversation where we understand each other, you know, and try to be respectful of it, which is a very adult thing that is in a lot of ways lacking today.
It for me, it's I can't be around people that are just always going to agree with what I have to say. Number one.
Right.
Number two, I want as much information as I can get. I want to know why people think the way they do. I want to know why people feel the way they feel. That way I can connect with not just somebody that I agree with, but also connect with somebody that I might not agree with.
Right.
And when you are able to do that, there's a lot of people that all they want is respect. They just want to be respected, but people don't understand. People can respect you without agreeing with you.
Sure.
And to me, that's a far stronger form of respect.
Right.
Like, man, I really respect what he does. I think he's great.
Sure. Man, hey, man, I can respect the Insane Clown Posse.
Whoop, whoop.
For running an independent business that has accrued, yep, these really hardcore fans. Now, as far as music goes, I think they stink. And as far as wrestling promoters go, I think they're even worse. But I respect the fact that they're these successful business guys who have created a meth-fueled empire for
DIY.
Themselves.
DIY. They treat the wrestlers far better than they used to. And it's very funny that the name of the episode is Santo, because for many that don't know, my very first concert was actually an Insane Clown Posse concert.
Oh, my God.
The very
By the way, it could not be further from my first concert, Weird Al and the Monkees.
And then I would have... In all candor, I would have rather went to go see Weird Al. However, I did become involved heavily within the community of Juggalos.
Sure.
And it was the very first time I ever saw Sabu. It was at an ICP concert.
Right.
And he suicide dived into the crowd, and I tried grabbing the railroad spike out of his boot that he was popping 2 liters of Faygo with, and he was punching me in the head. Knock it off. Knock it off. I'm just like, I just want the spike, dude. And he's just punching me in the head, and I'm just letting it happen. So one of my favorite things that the Insane Clown Posse has ever done was Stranglemania. And for those that are not familiar with what Stranglemania was, they basically Mystery Science Theater dubbed over Japanese wrestling. And there was Stranglemania 2, and they decided to throw in a clip from Santo versus the Wolfman. And it's actually, I believe, Jamie Madrox and Monoxide Child that were Mystery Science Theater dubbing over this Santo horror movie.
Right.
And it was fucking hilarious. It for any wrestling fan, if you can objectively remove your opinion, and my fiance...
Fuck that. I just want to watch the movie. I don't even care if it doesn't have subtitles. I would just watch an El Santo versus the Wolfman movie.
All that, man, it's so fascinating. It is so fascinating.
Well, look, culturally, it's fucking, it's like, you know, obviously we use imagery of luchadors just in our own show's avatar.
Yes.
Just because
Blue Demon.
Yeah, because culturally, it's so interesting that, you know, these guys, they're superheroes in their own culture. They walk around and no one knows their real identity. They're like Superman.
Yes.
And like, you know, it's like if Adam West was actually Batman.
Yeah.
And then he was just walking around. And did a series of movies with the Batman mask and cowl on, but was also wearing a suit for whatever part he was playing.
So I had two experiences with Santo, and I'm glad we actually named the episode today.
It was your idea.
Yeah, about Santo, and I felt like a luchador representation was really cool to have.
Well, it's something that I want, but, you know, because I try, like with the Turnbuckle Boogie Instagram page, I try to get the entire spectrum. You know, every morning I wake up and I go, who's a wrestler or what's a promotion that I've not touched on, you know, and I try to, you know, find some sort of fun thing, you know.
Yes.
And it's the same is happening with this show.
And so maybe not going too long into the Santo stories, I'll tell the really important one. I did get a mask signed by him.
Oh, wow.
When I was very young, and it was very hastily and as he was done with the match. But the
Dear Bodhi.
Yeah.
Keep your dreams alive. Life. Don't let go.
Santo. So there was a random Lucha Libre event that took place in 2011 or 2012. And the promoter had rented a ring from somebody in town. They backed out. Phil Brown, who's Legacy with Vegas Championship Wrestling, got the call, and we ended up taking his ring, setting it up. We had a lot of help during setup, and the main event was Santo versus somebody. On the card, you also had Psychosis, you had La Parca, you had a few names of Mexican wrestling. It was actually kind of cool to be a part of. I wasn't able to get booked on the show, but I was able to hang out backstage and things of that nature. And everyone else is rolling around without a mask on, right? And you don't really know who they are until you see them putting on their gear. And it's like, oh, shit.
Right.
Oh, shit.
Oh, that was Lil Parker the whole time.
And then...
I thought the gut would have given it away.
In walks Eligio Del Santo.
Mm-hmm.
Mask on.
Right.
Stays on the entire time.
Right.
Pulls his opponent into a separate corner away from everybody.
Right.
Calls his match and then goes and performs it. Walks out with the mask on.
Right.
And there was not one moment. And the rumor that I heard was that he will show his opponents his face.
Look, Turnbuckle Boogies, it's James Madden one more time. I'm in a subway station waiting to go home in Brooklyn, and I just read that Okada tested positive for COVID. There's another outbreak. Who knows when there'll be more matches out there. There's too many belts in all wrestling, especially New Japan. How about this? Only 2% of that country is vaccinated. You win matches there instead of titles? Let's get some vaxes. That's right. Forget the never open weight title. Bullshit. The never open weight vaccination. You win the match, they put a shot right in your fucking arm. Put it right in there. Tag team champs, two shots. Let's go. Get them right there. No more championships in New Japan. Let's just start vaxing people so we can get asses back in the seats so they can make no goddamn noise at the matches. I'm out, baby.
I've heard that the only place that he took his mask off is airports, because you have to.
And that's so for Father Santo and things like that, like that's, I'm sure, but once you take the mask off or once you show up to the airport, who's going to know that it's actually you?
Right.
And there's something very romantic to me about that.
Right.
About being able to keep that mystique. And Santo was, Elijo del Santo was so pleasant. He was so pleasant to me. I talked to him for a short period of time. He knew enough English to exchange some pleasantries, and it was just so surreal. And some people may find it foolish to still uphold a tradition that people may view as archaic. To me, it's fucking awesome.
Okay. First of all, you know, you are a trainer at a wrestling school.
Yes, sir.
You deal with a lot of very green people. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have to be. They come in not knowing anything.
Yeah.
And in some cases, not even knowing what a snapmare is.
Oh, yeah. That was a fun one.
That's a draw from a conversation off the air, folks. But you know what surprises me is that a lot of these green people, when they finally do get a little time in the ring in front of an audience, that they don't don a hood and be Mr. Wrestling X.
There was a period of time.
But that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like they used to. Because quite honestly, and this might be a cultural thing too, because of we live in the internet age, and you know, people are filming themselves from very young ages now.
Yes.
You know, my daughter has a YouTube channel. She's only 9. Now she's not filming herself. It's like some fucking anime horse shit. but you know what I mean? Like there are kids with fucking like YouTube channels and they get to grow up in front of people. I'm so thankful that I grew up in the time that I grew up where I can fail miserably in front of nobody for a decade plus, so that when I finally showed up ready to go in front of people, I was a fucking well-oiled machine.
Yep.
In whatever it was that I was in my case, it was music.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these young people, they don't have that shit. You know, they're filming themselves on Instagram, backflipping trampolines and shit.
The need for self-importance is not exclusive to the world of professional wrestling. However, in professional wrestling, it's prominent. And there's students at FSW that they already have gear, yet they haven't had a match yet.
Right.
There's some students that they cut promos and they haven't had a match yet. And I am not going to name anybody by
name. No, you shouldn't, but.
And however, you know, going back to the New Japan Young Lion system.
Right.
I love that system.
I love
it. You get black tights, you get black boots, and hey, here's your German suplex. Here's your single leg Boston Crab. Here's a drop kick. Go wrestle, and then if you can show that you can do the fundamentals, now we can start developing who you are as a person.
Right.
And
I mean, look, I think it's probably been mentioned on this show. There's a reason why comedians oftentimes don't really make it until their 30s and 40s. There's a reason why professional wrestlers, they're the apex of their careers is on the back half of their 30s and into their early 40s. It's because they have the wisdom of an age. Look, my favorite wrestler right now probably is Will Ospreay. He just had to let go of the title because he's suffering a neck injury.
Were you able to see what happened in that match?
No.
Okay.
but look, we know he's a young, wild dude.
Yeah, man.
You know, and when you're young and you've never had a legit injury,
you're invincible.
You're fucking invincible until you get something and it's like, oh, fuck, that's right. I am, you know, mortal.
Yes, sir.
And that's when you see those particular performers, they smarten up a little bit. You know, AJ Styles is a perfect example of a guy who's at the, you know, maybe just past the apex of his career. He's winding down, but he's doing the best work of his life because he's doing more psychology-based stuff instead of just flipping unrelentlessly without story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was always good, but now he's fine-tuned it because he's trying to make sure to do things smart as opposed to just wild.
Wrestling is far more psychological than people realize. Wrestling is far more emotional than people realize. And
the best versions of it are, we talked earlier in the show about Cody Rhodes and Dustin Rhodes.
It was beautiful.
It's the greatest match that AEW, in my personal opinion, has ever had.
Yes.
And it comes from the person. I mean, he said it when they created AEW. You know, the Bucks are going to be our tag team flippy guys. Cody Rhodes is going, or not Cody Rhodes, Kenny Omega is going to be our Japanese strong style guy. And I will be the emotional psychology, you know, based guy.
Yep.
But look, when he has matches, they get over way more than all those guys doing any of that shit. And he fucking kills himself half as much.
And you would think that you would want to learn a lesson from that, man.
I
always will tell people, I'm not trying to stifle your creativity. I'm not trying to tell you not to do cool stuff. I'm not trying to tell you not to take risks.
Right.
But what I'm telling you is that if you want people to actually remember who you are and what you did, and also kind of piggybacking off of injury. So I'm not invincible. I know that I'm not invincible after tearing my rotator cuff.
Yeah.
I had a match against a gentleman from New York named Pretty Boy Smooth, who was a close to 7 foot, 260-pound mammoth of a human being and turned out to be a amazing dude and a great wrestler. I nearly slipped and fell in the shower the night before that match. And the only thing that flashed in my head is, fuck. That's the only thing I could think of. I was scared. I was panicking. Like, I dug into my shin and I'm just like, I had to like pat myself off afterwards. And I'm just like, thank whatever deity there is to believe in. Thank him. Because, man, I was stressed and concerned, you know, like, here's the heartbreaker, kids. You are going to get fucking hurt.
Yeah.
You are going to have something happen to you in professional wrestling that is going to affect you for the rest of your fucking life. And you have to be ready for that when it comes, because it's a fucking inevitability.
Yeah.
No matter how safe you are.
You can't do this physical stuff without it eventually catching up with you. I mean, that's why people retire at the ages that they retire.
Yes, sir. Because
their body can't keep up with it anymore. But I mean, the point is, you know, with all those young people, I'm surprised that more of them, well, I'm not surprised. I kind of understand why, you know, you would think that more of the young people will realize, I'm young, I'm still not ready. I'm going to fucking work with this hood and be Mr. Wrestling fucking X for a few years before I can, you know. I like that culturally. I like Mr. Wrestling.
And
all the luchadors, you know.
We had the machismos at FSW for a period of time.
Right.
And that's something that I'll get in Joe's ear about, because there's some people that they may not be ready to do much more than get thumped. And at that point, you protect them by putting them underneath a mask. Even American Dragon, Brian Danielson.
Right.
My man had facials that were apparently so bad, they're like, here, put this thing on.
Yeah.
You know, and to hear that, and then to see him now.
Right.
Wowza.
Yeah. I mean,
wowza.
And plus, just culturally, it's something that I kind of miss, you know, the masked guy. It's kind of gone the way of the dodo, which is kind of a shame. If I were a wrestler, I would have that, you know, fucking, you know, for a stretch where I was fucking Blanco Diablo.
Yep.
You know, and then unmasked, and then carry it when I felt, or when everyone around me sort of respected me and what I was doing. And now I can carry on with the career that I want to be remembered for. And then it would always be that thing, you know, almost like how fucking Sami Zayn is now. People think he's a fucking great wrestler,
man.
And then he had this, but you know, he has this bit in his past of El Generico.
Yeah, and I mean, that's another thing too, man. Like, that dude's facial expressions are on a whole nother level.
Right.
Man, he is incredible. Like, it just mind-blowing. Deserves far more than he has, and can only hope that he gets more. Especially for Sami Zayn.
Yeah.
I feel that in my heart. For sure.
So before we wrap up, because I did say that I wanted to discuss journalism, and we spun off a great deal. We only talked about this particular one article and this person who, look, I'm sure he's a fine dude, and I'm sure he's a decent enough writer for modern media standards. Well, you know, whatever.
Sorry.
But there are other people who are in the industry of professional wrestling journalism, quote unquote, that exist who make pretty good money off of people like you and I by our attention, you know, seeing their ads on their websites.
Yep.
That, you know, ironically, I don't feel that much more about them than I do about this this Fells guy.
Yeah.
You know, I've not seen a professional wrestling journalist who I fully appreciate. I understand what Dave Meltzer is. He's about as close to a journalist as you can possibly be.
I would say that.
The problem is that you can't really call him a journalist because he can't cite his sources.
He can't. Not only can he not cite his sources, but he is so influenced by what he views to be right.
Right.
You know, and unfortunately, man, I think the Young Bucks are great.
Yeah.
Saying that the Young Bucks.
And I'm sure there's some kids out there who thought his -3-star match of the zombie lumberjack thing, they probably enjoyed it just fine.
Yes.
But he, you know, as the old joke goes, hey, that was a 4-star match. 5 of it took place in the Tokyo Dome.
Yep.
You know, he has a clear slant, which, I mean, why wouldn't you? He's a 50-plus-year-old man. You know, if he's liking shit with zombies in it, there's something wrong with him.
Yeah, man.
You know, it's unfair. And so even he, at his advanced age, can't even discern the difference, or he can't objectify these opinions that he has, you know, where he can look at the broad spectrum and say, there's a market for that, and I understand it. I don't like that sort of thing, but, you know, personal opinion be damned.
Yep.
He just put shit out there, and unfortunately, there are a large sect of fans who think that what he has to say is gospel. And I'm sorry, his opinions are nothing more than that. They're opinions. They're no better than all of theirs, all of yours, all of mine, you know.
And it feels like we live in a world where people just want to surround themselves with people that share the exact views and opinions as they do.
Right.
Man, I'm so thankful that.
And what's the fucking point of that?
Dude, you sent me music I've never even heard of before that I think is just absolutely incredible.
Right.
And I know you're not a Spotify person, but the one thing that I do enjoy about Spotify is that their music generator engine is far better than Pandora for me. I've been finding out about a bunch of new artists and I'm really kind of digging it. And I used to be the type of person, like, if it wasn't Norwegian black metal, I didn't want to listen to it. If it wasn't the Insane Clown Posse, I didn't want to have a thing to do with it, man. And I was just so closed off, right. And I could not understand. And I'll be in places and someone will complain about the music that's playing. And there's some things I really, really don't like. And I'll tell those to people jokingly on the side, but I used to be like, no, man, this is fucking bullshit. And it would ruin my mood for the entire day if I had to listen from something from the top 40 rotation,
right?
You know, but just because it's not for you doesn't mean that it's not for somebody else.
Hey, man, I don't fucking care for Shania Twain.
There you go.
I mean, I'm not there. I hate to point her out, but I just need a generic pop figure to point at. But you can sort of take a step back and go, you know, oh, that man, I feel like a woman. I can see why a lot of people would like that.
Yeah.
It may not be my jam, but I can see why. I don't enjoy the production, but I understand why a lot of people would like that production.
Yes.
And, you know, I, for a period of time, I went with vinyl and really got into record players. And it gave me a refreshed appreciation for music because, look, the music industry is really in a weird place right now.
Yeah.
Where, you know, fucking people, you know, they release one song, you know, Tekashi 6ix9ine releases one song on Tuesday and it's a huge hit. And then, you know, another song on Friday, but really what does he have to show for? Two songs? You know, who is there ever going to be a fucking huge superstar that's a talented songwriter instead of some sort of just a person who's doing something interesting? I think I've lost the plot of what I was fucking getting at. But the point is I had a record player that made me it gave me a renewed interest or appreciation in music in that, yeah, I don't like Shania Twain, but I could put that on and I could physically hold this thing in my hands and I could look at the liner notes and go, wow, look at all these people that fucking put in all this time into creating something. It's fucking really low hanging fruit or cheap of me to just go, this fucking sucks.
Yeah.
A lot of people worked on this shit, and you can do that across the board for a multitude of arts, which is why this fucking stupid article is so dumb. One guy with an opinion.
Yeah.
Not facts, just an opinion, completely tore down an entire show that he doesn't know anything about, how to create, how to book.
Oh, no, he feels like he knows something
about it. Oh, he feels it.
Yeah, man.
And he puts it out there, like I say, as a matter of fact, this happened and this happened. And as a matter of fact, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Yep.
And you're too close to the forest to, we'll say, appreciate the trees.
Yeah, man.
Everyone, including me. Including you, need to take a step back and show a little appreciation for the creators of the world. Because if you're just going to be a destroyer, you're not really contributing anything to society. Turnbuckle Boogie is a Devo Looter production and is produced by TJ Fogarty and Cody Hancock, with music and web production by Timothy Styles. If you're interested in booking or information on Cutthroat Cody, please go to cutthroatcody.com and follow us on Instagram @turnbuckleboogie. See you next Monday.